Good evening and welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. We are coming to you from the Voice of America in Washington. I'm Douglas Impuga. This evening we'll talk about the recent elections in Uganda. And with us tonight is Suleiman Kiflu. He's a political commentator and joining us by phone from Dallas, Texas. Welcome to the show, Hussein Kiflu.
Thank you so much, Douglas. I'm happy to be on this show once again after a long time.
You're very much welcome.
Albeit not on a happy note.
I see. You're very much welcome. And joining us from Durban, South Africa, is regular panelist Suleiman Mugula. He's an independent political analyst. Suleiman, welcome to the show once again.
Thank you very much for inviting me and believing to our listeners.
You're very much welcome. As I say, tonight we're looking at the recent elections in Uganda. Uganda went to elections on January 14th. As usual, the elections were disputed. There are a lot of complaints from human rights watchers who pointed out a lot of irregularities. Suleiman, I don't know where to start because in Uganda now it's almost expected that elections can never be accepted very easily.
True. As you've said, this is not the first disputed election. Ever since Museveni came to power, ever since he started the elections, or what would be called multi-party elections in 1996, the first multi-party elections in Uganda in 1996 were disputed. 2001 were disputed. 2006 were disputed. 2011 were disputed. 2016 were disputed. Again, 2021 have also been disputed. It is almost a replica of one another, the events and the systems, the behavior, everything is almost the same. It just repeats itself. The template seems to be the same. There will always be violence, or be rigging, unfair playing ground, and so on and so forth. So nothing is a surprise of what has happened in Uganda, although now the players have been different and the tempo seems to be more different from those ones which happened before.
I see. As Kiflu, you lived in Uganda at one time, and Museveni, as you're aware, has been in power for 35 years. If he's inaugurated again in May this year, his term will take him to 40 years, being one of Africa's longest-serving leaders. But generally, what's your comment on the recent elections and what transpired?
You're right, Douglas. I lived in Uganda for 7 years, to which I'm eternally grateful to Ugandans for their hospitality. And while living there in Uganda, I happened to have the opportunity to observe the politics of that country from a close-up. And it saddens me to witness that the dictator whom I used to hear about, Idi Amin, used to say that he's a lifelong president of Uganda. But his statement was a wishful thinking. And it is Mr. Yoweri Kaguta Museveni who had turned Idi Amin's wishful thinking into reality in the name of democracy. Now, like my friend Suleiman Mugula said, it's just what we have witnessed during this current election is just a replica of what has been happening in the past elections. So no surprise there. One thing Mugula said that the template is the same. There is a slight change, according to my observation, on that one, because now Museveni have also started, shutting down internet because it's the current technology. And the way he represses, the way he moves to rig election and then the brutal action he takes against ordinary Ugandans, against politicians who challenged him, seems to making him move from what some of us used to say, that he's a benevolent dictator, comparing him with our worst dictators, such as in Ethiopia. But now I think he's also coming out of that benevolent dictator appearance, and I think he's becoming brutal, more repressive, and that is really concerning for Ugandans.
Suleiman, Kifuru there mentions the brutality aspect of it. It has that the brutality also has been progressive, because now every other election it gets worse. People died, there's no letting up on the forces getting involved in the elections.
Douglas, I think for one to understand the violence which Museveni makes out to the opposition, one needs to appreciate the history of the country, especially from around 1979. From 1971 to 79, Uganda was led by Idi Amin, whom Hussein has talked about. In 1979, a number of militias, including one which was led by Mr. Museveni, a number of militias formed by the opposition to Idi Amin, fought against Amin, helped by Tanzania, helped by the Tanzanian army. After that help, after the fight, Idi Amin was overthrown in 1979. What ensured was jostling for power by the various militia groups that had participated in the war against Amin, in which Museveni was one of the participants. After that, some semblance came in 1980 when elections were organized, multi-party elections, in which Museveni formed a political party and which were won by one faction which was led by Milton Obote. Museveni felt he had been cheated, though he lost miserably. He decided to form another militia and went and started fighting a government that had been elected by people in 1980. Fortunately or unfortunately, there were irregularities like any other elections, but for him, he decided he was going to use the gun to come to power. That is how, in 1986, after Obote had been overthrown by his own soldiers in 1985, Museveni again took the opportunity to fight the various groups that had developed, the various militias that had been formed to fight against Obote too. Then he outsmarted them in 1986, and his militia took power in 1986. So in essence, Museveni took government using a militia. This militia which he used, if we are to go by the company, when he started the militia, you will understand that the militia which he formed had the majority of the fighters were from his home region. And again, from that home region, again, the majority of those from his home regions were people from Rwanda whose parents had migrated to Uganda in the 1950s. So that is what was called the NRA, and that was the force that took over Uganda, and that is the force which he has used up to today. Though the people have got, the former fighters have become old, but they have been replaced by the children of those who were a fighter when he was fighting in the bush from 1980s up to 86. So in other words, what I'm trying to say is that inherently, we have got a gunman who took over power, and they have been holding power with the use of the gun. Remember, when Museveni took power in 1986, he promised a constitution. He made what was called a democratic constitution, which came into operation in 1996. But when you look at that constitution, you'll find that constitution was tailored to fit his interest. For example, it did not allow multi-party elections. So which means from 1986, when he took over, he was meant to govern the country forever, though on surface he hoodwinked people by giving a constitution, which when analyzed, even the constitution did not meet anything much. So we have got a dictatorship which started from 1986, gunmen holding the country at ransom up to the present 2021 election, which are meant not to change leadership, but which are meant to perpetuate the status quo of Museveni. That is why every year whenever people try to challenge him, he becomes more and more violent. That is where we get the violence becoming more and more, because the opposition is growing more and more to his rule. So that is the background. That is why you have got that extreme violence continuing and growing into heights, because the man himself has never been a Democrat. He has never prepared to be a Democratic leader. He has never prepared himself for multi-party elections. It is only the situation which has been forcing him, and in any case, he does not allow it to happen.
Kifulu, Suleiman there alludes to the background of the whole Ugandan political structure. But it's common across the continent that where liberation, so-called liberation forces, form a party, they tend to fuse their party with the government, so that if you are contesting against them, it seems as if you are contesting against the government, the army, all the institutions of government. Do you look at it that way?
Yes, I look at it that way. I mean, Suleiman Mugula put it, Museveni is a strong man, just another dictator hatched and born in a previous dictatorial system. All his life, he knows no other tradition except tyranny. So he got the power through a barrel of a gun, and he created the patronage system. Just like most dictators in the vicinity of Uganda, including my own country, this is how they rule their respective nation. And this multi-party election, it is a fact that they had to adopt, because ever since the collapse of the Berlin Wall, one-party rule had gone out of vogue, had gone out of fashion. So they had to pretend that they embrace multi-party election, to which they're not seriously committed. And so, like Obama once said in the African Union when he was in Addis Ababa, they sprinkle this election periodically, but they make it beforehand that election would not be free and fair. They make sure that election would not be free and fair. And even in spite of the process being skewed, when they lose the election, when they face serious challenge, like Museveni is facing from this young gentleman, Robert Chagulani or Bobi Wine, so they rigged that election in a blatant way, and they used violence. So what we're seeing is it's not uncommon. It has become almost a fad now. And they have the way they do it, the way they rig election, the way they overstay in power has become so shameless. And I think the reason that they are emboldened to be like this is also because in the last 4 years, as you know, Trump had made a mess of the United States. And the whole Western world, because of him, was put off balance. And they were not focusing on what's going on sub-Sahara Africa. And so now dictators like Museveni, dictators like the new kid in the block, Abiy Ahmed of Ethiopia, they, you know, they rely on China. And so what we're seeing every now and then, the way spaces are being more closing up, you know, no space is given to ordinary people to vent, to express their feelings, to vent their frustration. And so that's what we're seeing. And the whole army, the military, like you said, the whole military, the whole government apparatus serves to their interests, not to the people.
I see. Well, for those just joining us, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable. We are coming to you from the Voice of America here in Washington. Tonight, we're discussing the recent elections in Uganda. Our panelists are Vincent Mugula, an independent political analyst based in Durban, South Africa, and Hussein Kiflo, who is a political commentator who's joining us from Dallas, Texas, here in the U.S. And I'm your host, Douglas Impuga. Now, Suleiman, you mentioned all that, and people who try to compete with Museveni or his ilk have a problem, because like in the last three successive elections, his competitors have had either to be in jail before elections or in jail immediately after elections or during elections. The current leading opposition leader, Bobi Wine or Kyagulanyi Robert, is currently now filing a petition, although he had to be under house arrest for several days after the elections. With given the current status in Uganda now, is there any hope in the Ugandan Supreme Court? Because these are handpicked judges by Museveni.
You see, from the beginning, Bobi Wine and the other opposition politicians, leaders and political parties went into the election knowing that the results would be what they are today. They knew that the elections were going to be rigged, but they wanted to stretch Museveni. From the beginning, it was very clear. The moment Mr. Museveni used violence, beat up the parliamentarians, roughened up everybody using the army, attacked parliament and went and forced the parliament to delete the age limits. The moment the age limits were deleted by violence, it was very clear that even if you are organizing an election, that election will be won violently. So from day one, it was very clear that his competitors had no chance. But they went in to mobilize the people, and even himself, he was surprised by the competitor whom he faced. He never expected that he would get a challenge like this one of the young man. He never knew that the youth would turn against him. He put so many impediments. He was ready with so many impediments, but Bobi Wine overran all impediments. For example, he never expected that Bobi Wine would have a political party. Bobi Wine managed to get it at the last minute. He never expected Kyagulanyi would get, or Bobi Wine would get, a national appeal all around the country. He got it. He never expected that Bobi Wine would get the finances to run an election. Bobi Wine got finances, especially from the diaspora, and he managed to run an election. He never expected that Kyagulanyi would get the media after he had stifled the traditional media. Again, Bobi Wine oversmarted him. He left the traditional media, he went on social media, and he got international media on his side. He never expected that Bobi Wine would get seasonal politicians to bolster his bid all across the nation. Bobi Wine was able to get seasonal politicians. He never expected that Kyagulanyi would get a resilient group of supporters to withstand his violence. Bobi Wine got a resilience group which stood and was able to stand the violence. He never expected that Kyagulanyi would get... He expected that Kyagulanyi was a novice politician who could not be able to cope up with the serious political issues. Kyagulanyi or Bobi Wine learned so quickly, challenged him politically, discussed the issues, and and beat him in the game. Because of that, nobody expected that Kyagulanyi would be what he was, and he turned out to be another person. He thought he would be able to be freely. Kyagulanyi outsmarted him. He organized a tele center which was controlled internationally, not within. So from the way Kyagulanyi has been able to challenge him, the way he has pushed him on the wall, this is a litmus test for the judiciary. Much as in the past he has been able to win in the judiciary, this time things might be different. What makes it different is, one, in all the elections that have gone through, in all the elections that have been challenged, no one has ever had a resilient group. The Museveni would arrest his opponent, would arrest Kizza Besigye, and things continue as normal. He would do whatever he wants on the candidate, imprison, incarcerate him in his own home, beat him up, and things would continue. Now it has been proved by the November riots that Kyagulanyi cannot be touched. You touch him, his group is ready to fight you. So that is also another factor. So the judges this time, they have got a serious, watchful eye which is ready to fight back. I think there is hope. We need to give them chance. Every court has got its own tradition. It wants to create its own legacy. Maybe this time there might be a better chance, because both locally and internationally, it seems as if there is a wave of change against Museveni. It seems people are fed up with the dictatorship in the country.
I see. Kifulu, there are those who say it was more of a protest vote than even a vote for Kyagulanyi. People were willing to take anybody else other than Museveni. But I want you to comment on Suleiman's optimism. Do you trust the Supreme Court may do something?
I find it very hard to say, because my problem is I compare Uganda's Supreme Court with that of my own country, and there were instances that I was surprised by Ugandan court giving decision against Mr. Museveni's government. I read long ago that when Andrew Mwenda is not the Andrew Mwenda of today, and when he was harassed by the government alongside I forgot his name, the other journalist
Onyango-Obbo
in Nairobi. Onyango-Obbo. I remember in the Ugandan legislation, there was a clause, a provision talking about seditious laws. And the court freed Andrew Mwenda and Onyango-Obbo, and even declared that that seditious clause is unconstitutional. And remembering these things, you never know. The Supreme Court, like Suleiman Mugula said, because people are also watchful, and this young man, Bobby Wine, the one whom they underestimate, the one whom Museveni and cohorts tried to write off because he manages to attract a lot of supporters from the young generation because of the very fact that he's in the entertainment industry and the music, you know, people listen to his cause and people-oriented music. And I was even surprised that Bobby Wine is eloquent and he's better in stating himself than the stuttering Museveni. And so this young man, they should watch themselves. He's not like he's underestimated. He's not like they try to write him off. He's eloquent. He knows his stuff. I saw his interview on Al Jazeera, on BBC. The man is composed. And in this internet, tech-savvy world, the younger generation, they know how to rally around a leader when they see one who embraces their cause. So I don't think the Supreme Court, like Suleiman Mogula said, I don't think they would be stupid enough, like the Ethiopian courts, like the Ethiopian Kangaroo courts. I hope that they would really consider all the facts. It's glaring, you know, from long before people go to the ballot boxes. The election is rigged because people were denied their right of free expression, their right to protest. Yeah. Even internet was shut down, and we can imagine what can happen behind all this glaring repression. You shut down internet, you deny journalists you access to report. Yeah. You imprison politicians, their supporters. So the election is rigged from the get-go, long before people went to the ballot box.
Okay, Kifulu, Kifulu, do you think, despite all these irregularities and these hardships, are such elections necessary? In just in a word, in about 10 seconds.
I think we have to rethink now, because I don't think there must. We have to devise, we have to come up with a different strategy. We have to deny these dictators, you know, the way they make a mockery of elections. I think we have to rethink.
I see.
We have to come up with another strategy.
Suleiman, in 10 seconds, do you think such elections, despite their faults, are necessary?
Partly, because time comes when the country rises against the dictator, because every country has got its own way of reacting, of bringing about change. This time in Uganda, it has been a surprise that the whole country, especially the young people, have risen almost unanimously. If you see the voting patterns, the central region voted over 70%. There is a likelihood that the whole country voted 70%. So we are just waiting for the Supreme Court, and we are just waiting for Bobby Wine to prove, which means that the way Bobby Wine said, he can use the vote, however stupid it is, if the people are conscientized, if the people are mobilized, they can use it to peacefully throw away a dictator. But otherwise, the international community should help the local situations and the regional organizations like the AU, the IGAD, and so on. They should stand firm. They should find a way to reject these dictators who are destroying their very own countries.
Unfortunately, we're out of time, and that wraps up this edition of Reporters Roundtable. My thanks to my panelists, Suleiman Mogula in Durban and Hussein Kifulu in Dallas, Texas. Gentlemen, thanks very much for being on the show.
You're most welcome, Douglas.
You're very much welcome. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that you can access this program. All you have to do is to go to our main website at www.voanews.com, click on programs. Once again, thank you very much for tuning in. I'm your host, Douglas Impoga, wishing you all the best.
Press Conference USA, host Carol Castiel speaks with Jennifer Kavanaugh, senior political scientist at the RAND Corporation, about the phenomenon of truth decay. A diminishing reliance on the facts and analysis in American public life, which threatens to undermine democracy. Listen to Press Conference USA this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossings, where we feature music and interviews along with your favorite artists from around the world. Tune in and interact live with us here in Washington, D.C.
Hello, Shirin.
Hello, Larry. How are you?
Good. How are you tonight?
Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT.